Today's guest is Marco Spiezia. Marco was born in Italy and moved to the UK at age 13. He studied business at uni, after which he worked in Cornwall for a while, then took over the management of an international school in Italy while setting up his consultancy business. Through the consultancy, he ended up finding the company behind Radar Opus, and he's been with them since 2014. I thoroughly enjoyed my conversation with Marco today, and a highlight for me was his mention on how Radar Opus is using artificial intelligence, or AI, to really amplify already incredible software. Marco comes from a family of homeopaths who love nature. His parents still run the Enlight Beauty Company, which produces 100% handmade organic skincare, so check out www.enlightbeauty.co.uk. So those of you who have been listening to this podcast for a while will have heard me raving about Radar Opus on several occasions because it's the only reprotization software I have ever used since 2011. I literally could not do my consults without it. I absolutely love all the books that are loaded into the software. Don't get me wrong, I love hard copies of books, but when you know there's a certain section in a book which pertains to a case you're working on, it can be a pain flicking through all the pages of your hard copy to find that section. It's so much quicker to just bring up the book in Radar Opus, use the search function, and go to that section straight away. I also love that I can search through journals and provings, and of course, the reprotization functions are just phenomenal and contains thousands of remedies. And for any of our listeners who are already using Radar Opus but haven't upgraded to Adonis yet, you will have your mind blown. Go and pay the tiny amount that it costs you to upgrade. It's ridiculously cheap. You will be so blown away, exactly how I was when I finally upgraded to Adonis. I know so many of us are so set in our ways, but honestly, I think it was for me about $150 here in Australia to upgrade my software, maybe not even that. And to have all those thousands of extra remedies, all the extra rubrics that have been added, it is really incredible. So if you are using Radar Opus and you haven't upgraded to Adonis yet, be sure that you do that. It is so worth it. So Radar Opus can be purchased outright or it can be rented. So get in touch with your local Radar Opus rep for your country by visiting radaropus.com. I just have to add in here as well that Marco actually in his spare time loves to sing and play the guitar. He's also released some beautiful songs, so I've popped the links for you in the show notes. Be sure to go and check that out. I was so pleasantly surprised and I really enjoyed his songs. And actually, I was busy listening to it while I was working on the intro, and my daughter came in here and the second she heard his music, she was boogieing away. So that was really cool. And I've kind of tongue-in-cheek joked a few times on the podcast now about how so many of the homeopaths on our show are also incredible musicians. So I'm going to put it out there yet again. Marco, you need to go and get together with Frederick and Luke and Deonta Brett and Jonathan Stalick and all the other homeopathic musicians out there and write us a song to release for Homeopathy Awareness Week in April, okay? Alrighty, enough waffling from me. Let's get into this awesome episode and remember to check out radaropus.com for a demo to rent or to buy this amazing software. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangout. Today, we have the privilege to chat with Marco Spiezia.
Almost.
Almost Spiezia. Is that right?
That's it. Thank you for having me. Absolute pleasure.
It's so great to have you on. I have to tell you a little funny story. So you obviously are an incredible musician as well. And we found your music on Spotify. And just earlier I was playing it just to have a little listen. I really like the beat. It's really uplifting music, actually. And my daughter came in here and she was like, like just dancing to the music. And I was like, I'm going to interview him. She's like, what? That's so cool. So my daughter, almost 9, gives you like a huge thumbs up. She came in here like just grooving. I was like, oh.
Fantastic. I was just going to say, it's funny you say that because I've got a few friends who have children and it's the same thing. Like apparently adults don't care about my music, but children rave upon it. It's who knows? It's just fun kids music.
It's very happy though. And it's got such a good beat. Like, you know, just really good rhythm and beat. Are you a good dancer too?
I am an awful dancer. My wife loves dancing and she keeps saying, Marco, let's go to dance classes. We've done it once. I hated it. And she just allows me to just be into music without having to dance.
Now, I've said this to you before, and I have said this so many times on the podcast, but we've got loads of homeopaths and people in the homeopathic community who are so good at music. And I really like put it out there to you, you on the guitar and maybe vocals, and Luke Norland on the French horn. I don't know.
Yes, Luke is great. Yeah.
And Dion Tebret on his Spanish guitar. And, you know, we've got all these homeopaths and Radar Opus guy. Why am I just...
Yes. So I actually heard, there may be people who were there, but there was once I think it must have been a national congress of some kind in, I want to say Croatia. And I think they had Frederick Skroins on guitar and Jeremy Scher on harmonica. And like, they actually did like a live thing back in the days. So yeah, why not replicate it?
Oh, I'll do the tambourine.
Why the triangle? I love the triangle.
I can do some vocals. You know, I did my bit of choir back in my day in chamber.
Excellent.
Choir.
Well, there you go.
Did sing on stage when I was at school, but you know, I don't know about
now. Let's do this.
And we have both, our eldest sons are both called Joshua. And you have a funny story to tell that, about that, apparently.
Yeah, I have a really funny story about that. So he was not meant to be called Joshua at all. And so I was born in Italy, grew up in England. But my wife is Italian, very Southern Italian, and her family is very Southern Italian. So my mother-in-law will forgive me. I don't think she speaks very good English, so I don't think she'll hear the podcast, hopefully. But basically, of course, she had knitted everything and prepared a whole thing for, you know, because it was her first son and it was meant to be called Thomas Elijah. So a very different name. And then the day that the child was born, we were in hospital and I looked at my wife called Elena. I said, Elena, I just have a funny feeling about this name. And she was like, Marco. And I said, well, I just don't want to call him, you know, Thomas Elias. And she said, Marco. I said, let's call him Joshua. And she just looked at me. She was like, Joshua? And I said, yeah. And I think she was just panicking because she was about to go into surgery. So she just, you know, looked at me and said, okay, Joshua. And so that all of our family arrived like, you know, halfway through that day. And they were like, welcome, Thomas. And I was like, no, Joshua. And the look of hate on their face when they found out I had changed the name to what was people's birth was not pretty.
Oh.
So there you go.
Well, our stories couldn't have been more different because in my husband's family, every second son is called Joshua Yubad and the alternating son is called Willem Jacobus. So my husband is Willem Jacobus. Our son's Joshua Yubad. And, you know, my husband's dad is Joshua Yubad. So it's a generation. And so I never had a choice in the matter, but I love the name. So there was never any, you know, issues with me anyway. But that's
safe. No, it's okay.
Tell us about how you found out about homeopathy.
Oh, okay. Everything began 2,000 years ago. No. So my father is a homeopath. So as I said to you, I was born in Italy. My father was a medical doctor and he studied in the Luimo School, which was at the time maybe the only or the main school in Italy for homeopathy. He just fell in love. He loved plants, herbalism, all that stuff. So basically, I grew up in a family where nature and homeopathy were at the very, you know, base of everything. Side note, my parents currently have a company called Enlighten UK, and they were the first people, I think, in Europe to actually create 100% organically certified beauty products, skincare. So that has always been into plants. And I'm going to share with you a very funny story about how that started. Because when we moved to England, I was about 13, and my dad couldn't speak English because he had studied French, and my mom could. So dad was a bit stuck because he couldn't really see patients without a translator. And we were on a big farm and he had a huge garden. So he thought to himself, I'll start growing medical plants because that was his passion. Long story short, someone comes to see him one day. She was called Annie and she had some severe surgery on her back. It wasn't healing. And so he said, look, I'll give you some homeopathic remedies. But then if you want, I could also try something else. She said, yeah, why not? So he got a basic recipe for a wax-based skincare thing from a friend of his, you know, in Italy. And he went to get his calendula and all, you know, the bits from the garden, made the oil, and basically created this little handmade potion. He gave it to her, and she came back after 2 weeks saying, look, I'm healed. Like, what did you do? What is this? And he said, look, I didn't even write the recipe. I just went to get the plants and, you know, did this based on my knowledge. So long story short, she was so excited about it that she helped them set up the first company. And that's how the whole thing started. And then
so
from then on.
You've had great skincare your whole life. And I'm sure your wife's very happy about it.
My wife loves my parents because she gets all the freebies. Yeah. I am terrible. They constantly gave me stuff to try. And they're like, oh, Marco, have you tried? I'm like, No, sorry, I forgot. but I did try once, actually, I did try once a product that, of course, that forgot the recipe of, for alopecia, because when I was in college, I did my A-level studies and I got severe alopecia out of stress. And that was very intense. And yeah, he made this really smelly green, like gooey stuff that I put on my hair for 2 weeks, and it worked. You know, that's like a half wizard, you know, person. And that's how I got into homeopathy, by either way. So I didn't study homeopathy. I just had it in the family, and I studied business. And then I got into Rigor Opus, which of course Zeusoft is a company that I now manage, out of complete randomness. I was actually doing, so the real story is there was a company that I was aware of, and I was doing consulting, business consulting, and I was asked to do a due diligence on the company that at the time was managing Rigor Opus in Belgium. A due diligence, for those who don't know, is basically, it's like a check, an accounting type check, where you ask a consultant to go in and check everything that is that company so that the person who is paying you to do the job can decide whether they want to invest in it, whether it's a good company or not, you know, it's that kind of thing. So you're like an inspector of some kind. So that was me, age, I think it was in my early 30s, just, you know, rock up into this Belgian company, basically spoke to everyone in French, because obviously they're all French. And I got to be honest, the answer I actually gave to the people who employed me was, no, don't invest. And the truth is that that company at the time called Archibald was going through a really difficult period. Now, I later got to find out everyone was going through a very difficult period because they were coming off the golden era of homeopathy. So homeopathy in general has always had, if you look at the history since the birth up to now, has had big ups and downs. Part of the ups and the downs have also been to do with lobbying and with, you know, basically governments liking or not liking homeopathy, as you may be aware. And yeah, so in the, you know, after the 90s to 2000 boom, which was huge, basically things start going bad. And now the company was suffering. So for some reason, they liked me. And so they asked me to work a bit more for them. And so I started, you know, one day a week and then 2 days a week. I remember Frederick Scroins once said, look, can you do a little bit more, please? Because, like, you know, we need help. I liked everyone. It was actually a very nice family environment. And I could really see that the people who were working in there were working, of course, you know, to make money and to pay the bills. But there was so much more than that. There was passion, there was love. There was a sense of greatness in the sense of trying to do something great for others. So altruism. And in my personal sphere, trust and altruism are very, very important things in my life. So when I work with people who I can trust and who I can see are altruistic at heart, then I put so much more effort into what I do because it gives you a sense of humanity, you know?
Yeah, something bigger than yourself. I mean, we're here on this planet for such a short time and you spend so much of your life at work, a third of your life at work. Why wouldn't you do it doing something that you're passionate about and that lights you up and that you know you're making a difference? Like literally, what is the point otherwise?
That's basically it. Yeah. And I can tell you, it's been hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, people have asked, I've had several people asking the real story and we're very transparent, like we have nothing to hide really. Some companies are very secretive about what they did and what they didn't do. We are the opposite. And so the real story is when I came in, Archibald had a lot of debt with everyone. It was in a bad situation. And the reason was that it used to be a lot bigger. Back in the days, like, yeah, Archibald was a big company. It like employed dozens and dozens of people. And, you know, when I'm up with the crutch, so did the company. My predecessor just didn't have, I think, the speed to change everything. I don't necessarily think it was, you know, bad decisions. I don't know. I wasn't there. And I don't like to judge things that I don't know. But long story short, we had to close the company. So the company actually went bankrupt. And I followed the whole bankruptcy thing. And then we were left with a very difficult situation because we didn't want to lose Rigor Opus, Synthesis Repertory, the whole thing. But of course, when you go bankrupt, you know, you lose. And so we managed to find a group of people who were willing to basically buy out. So what happens is you can put a company for sale on its assets, and then you have to do it officially. So it goes through a sale process with the government. Okay. So you say to the government, look, I've gone bankrupt. If someone is willing to buy whatever is left, you know, they can do it. And so we did something very delicate, but we made it. So we put an offer through with some new people who believed in homeopathy, and there were other offers. I wasn't able to find out who offered because for legal reasons, you're not allowed I think I know who it was, but I don't know for sure. Anyway,
Another part I heard is that there was one of the people that were working at Archibald at the time stole some of the software or took some of the software, because there was a really great webinar that yourself and Luke Norlin and Frederick did, which you were very graciously gave us the audio for, and we turned that into a podcast episode just so people know a little bit about the history or the behind the scenes. I found that very valuable myself, actually, just knowing a little bit more and just appreciating software. I'm so grateful because I've used it since 2011. Been using Red Opus. So it was really interesting seeing, just hearing a little bit more about behind the scenes and all the passionate individuals that kept it alive.
Yeah. I mean, we're not a huge team and we're very spread out. There's a few people in Belgium, a few Northern Italy, England, and then we've got a team of about 50 people who resell it around the world. Mm-hmm. But the core team is 10, 20 of us really working our butts off. Mm-hmm. And I mean, on the software side, it's difficult to explain. Some people sometimes come and say, I have a problem, this is not working, and why can't it be free? Well, basically, a software is like a house, but you're constantly building that house. So it's difficult to explain psychologically to people, because I think a lot of people just think, it's like I buy a house and then the house is mine. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, I mean, yes, but you've got to look after the foundation and you've got to repaint it every now and then, and you've got to look at the pipes. And of course, that in a house happens over a period of maybe 50 years. With software, it happens every year because you work on an operating system, which is Apple, Microsoft, whatever it is, and they change their operating system all the time. So it's like if you have a house and it's on a ground and the ground is changed every year. If the ground that your house is sitting on changes every year, the house needs to be changed every year as well. Otherwise, it falls. And so we are literally constantly working to make sure that this happens. And it's not our choice. The choices of these conglomerate multinationals that have decided to create this monopoly, which is very unfortunate, I have to say, and I hope it will change. I think with Web3 and the way technology is going, this is going to change. Mm. But at the moment, that's how it works. So we're very dedicated. We do listen a lot to people and to people who give us feedback. And we really are here not just to sell the product. We are a project. We digitalize old books. We safekeep everything that we can find in homeopathy. Mm. And we constantly strive to try and make an homeopath's life easier. Because let's not forget, until only a few decades ago, you had to remember everything by heart. The greatest homeopaths in the world knew Materia Medica by heart, and that's how they treated people, which is insane, wonderful, but luckily you no longer have to. You can do with that if you want and if you have the time, and you'll be a great homeopath, but otherwise technology can help.
Mm. Well, I have a question for you, because how many books are in Radar Opus? Because there's, I feel like Radar Opus to me is an ocean, and I like no one little drop of that. And even this weekend at the conference, I was at the Australian Homeopathic Association's conference.
How was that?
It was amazing. Oh, I could do a whole podcast just on that. In fact, I need to. But Kim Elia had Radar Opus on there, and he presented a case and then he showed how he repertorized it in Radar Opus. But there was something that he did on there, which I didn't know that you could do. And I just feel like every single time I work with the software, I learn a new thing. And then actually that evening I was rooming with Sarah Valentini, and I said to her, do you know about the asterisk thing? Because Luke Norland once told me about that, how if you could, and I said, if you're thinking of using the Rubik's strike and you're not sure if it's strike or striking, you can go STRIK asterisk, and then it will give you everything that's strike and striking. Right. And I showed her that, and she was like, mind blown. Yeah. And that one tiny little feature has made such a huge difference in my clinic, with finding really good rubrics that I would never, ever have known or to think of otherwise. Yeah. So I'm really grateful for that. Books are there, because that's the other thing, Oh my gosh, I bought Jan Scholten's Lanthanized book the other day. And then Jessie, who's one of the reps for Radar Opus, she's like, Eugenie, why did you buy it? It's in your Radar Opus. I'm like, I didn't even think to check there. But to be fair, I love hard copies and electronic copies, but there are hundreds. I mean, how many books are in there?
Thousands. So I think Materia Medica wise, it's over 1,500.
Wow.
Repertories is about, 20 odd. But then you've got all the journals and maybe let's call them items, because sometimes people get iffy with the calculation in the sense that if you've got a Materia Medica collection, for instance, some people say that's one book, but I say, well, no, because physically there are 10 books. So that's 10 books. So I think it's over 3,000 altogether.
Yeah, I believe that. And that's one of the things I love so much is that you can do a search through all the journals and all the articles and the Materia Medica and, you know, everything that's there.
And you can repertorize with information from the Materia Medica, yes, which is what a lot of people don't know. And it's so powerful.
Yeah.
Because you know, you find phrases and information and it's not just a repertory. And I think actually you've summarized really well the goods and the bads of Reader Opus, because Reader Opus is a minefield in the sense that it has so much, but because it's been built for the past sort of 20 odd years, sometimes it's hard to actually get the information out. There's lots of tips and tricks. And actually, a lot of the work that we're doing now is exactly that. We're trying to simplify and simplify and simplify and to make it more intuitive, because people do come to us and say, oh my God, like there's so much, but I don't know where to start. So it is a learning curve, but we say, like within the company, the only thing that Reader Opus can't do is make coffee.
and give massage. So,
and I can tell you, we have a backlog of requests from important teachers and like clever people in the industry that with the workforce that we have, we could be working for the next 10 years and we still wouldn't have enough time. There's so many good ideas and good things that you can do to help your life, you know, as a homeopath, and we just don't have the time to do it all. But we do try, and we are coming out, by the way, with lots of cool new things. So there is a release coming up now. It's going to come up in the next couple of weeks, I think, version 3.3, and it will have the ability for you to make your own Materia Medica and create your own repertory from scratch. We've done that really because we've realized the importance of empowering people. You know, there's so many people that love, you know, important masters, but also so many people that just want to try stuff out and who maybe even at a seminar and say, okay, let me get this information and let me make it into a Materia Medica, because then I want to search what I wrote for that specific thing when I do my repertorization and when I look at a patient. So
that is getting me excited, because this Golden Spiral Proving Group that I'm in with Anissa Appeline, we're proving a lot of new remedies, and that would be incredible to throw all of that in there and be able to search.
Yes, that. Yes. And that's also why the other reason why we did it is because we've got a really good group of people who send us provings, Materia Medica repertories to release, which we obviously do. But then that takes time. Sometimes it takes years because Frederick's team is very meticulous on the quality of information. Whereas if we give you the freedom of creating your own Materia Medica repertory, while you get to do that, you can search on the fly and see what's happening. And that's what people want these days. They want immediacy. They want something that they can check immediately. So that's really exciting, and that's coming out. And secondly, if all goes well, and if I'll still have hair on my head,
that's okay. You've got your dad's cream if it comes off again.
That's right. I can try if he remembers the recipe. We're coming out with an online version. I don't think we've said that publicly yet. So it's going to be called Opus Plus.
That's going to be amazing. But it wouldn't be like the full, because I mean, you couldn't. Would it be
it's going to be a pretty full program, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it won't have every feature that Reader Opus has, okay? No way in hell.
It's going to be incredible, though, because that's what's been holding a lot of people back, because, you know, it takes up so much space on your computer.
Not only, but I mean, I also understand the price side of it. I mean, you know, if you want to buy the most expensive version of the group, because it's expensive. And I understand, you know, and by the way, it's not expensive so I can drive a fancy car because I drive a Ford. It's just because it's so much work. And by the way, just as a reminder, we don't drive flashy cars. We're a group of dedicated people who reinvest every penny that comes in into the company. And, you know, we support HRI. We do so many things that are for homeopathy. So please remember, if you're buying a ZUSOF product, you are basically helping a project to keep going for the good of homeopathy. That's basically
But also, you know, cost is so relative. People won't bat an eyelid at drinking a coffee every day. At, you know, it's $5, $6 over here in Australia. Yeah. Having their hair done, having their nails done, but it's wasting money on a whole bunch of stuff. But, you know, Radar Opus is the best investment I have ever made. And every single day when I open my laptop, the first thing I open is my email. The second thing I open is Radar Opus every single day without fail. Like, I couldn't do what I do without it. It's like a cardiologist without an ECG machine or, you know, something like that. Like, totally, how could you do your job without it? So it's totally. The cost is relative.
And I think if I, you know, to play devil's advocate, you're absolutely right. And I'm heart, you know, it's touching to hear it because there's so much sweat that goes into it. But of course, you are fully working homeopaths. I also appreciate that there are people who may be students or who do homeopathy part-time. The world is big. And also, big difference, of course, one thing is someone earning money in Europe or Australia. One thing is someone earning money in, you know, India or in, you know, in other countries where I wouldn't say people are poor, but of course, you earn less money. And I also want to say something out there because sometimes I hear rumors and people say, oh, go and buy Red Ropers from that country because it's cheaper. I'm going to say out there so it's clear for everyone. Yes, it is cheaper. So if you buy our program in India, it is cheaper than buying it in America. And there's a reason, because we are nice people. We are losing money in a country to help homeopaths be able to afford the program in India. Because if we sold the program at that price everywhere in the world, we would close tomorrow. So when people say, oh, but it's cheaper, yes, because a homeopath in India maybe earns $500 a month. So it's unfair to ask that person to pay a premium price, but I have to pay people who work in Europe. So what we try and do is, instead of doing what big companies do, who say, I don't give a crap, I'm just going to sell it expensive to everyone, and if you can't afford it, screw you, we say, we try and be as nice as possible and say, we actually look at the demographics of that place and say, well, if a homeopath can charge, for example, 50 euros for a visit, then in theory, they can afford a normal price, for example, of the program. If a homeopath can charge $1 for a visit, then they can't spend, you know, a few thousand euros on a program. So we knock it off earnings. So, you know, if you are scouting for prices, please know that we are trying to be as fair as possible. And if you are paying a premium price in a premium country, it's because you are being also looked after by people who live in that country and who have that cost of living. So we really try and be as global as possible and help everyone.
And I have to ask you, with AI, it's just you cannot have a conversation in any sort of area of life at the moment without AI coming up. Is that going to influence Radar Opus at all? Or are you working that in there somehow?
Oh, yeah.
Are you?
So, yeah, I'm going to clear this out also for a lot of people, because I was recently in Bogota at the LMHI, which this year was, in Colombia. For those who don't know, the LMHI is the International Yearly Congress of Medical Homeopaths. Next year is in Spain. And it's a very, if you've never been, I highly suggest that you do, because it's an amazing place to be. And there were a lot of talks on AI, so I spoke there as well. And a lot of people were very afraid. And they were like, oh, you know, this is the devil. It's terrible. It's going to wipe us out, blah, 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 blah. And I can tell you what I know today. So, of course, if we have the conversation again in 10 years, it will be a different conversation. But today I can tell you that's a lie and it's totally okay. And we can work on this. So there's a little story. Okay. I'm pretty sure it's in the Bible. I want to say St. Michael, but I'm going to be wrong. So I don't know which angel it was, but the story goes, for centuries and centuries, this angel was fighting the devil, okay? And the devil had wings and they were fighting. And once the devil was winning and then the angel was winning and then the devil and then the angel and the angels. At some point, they all got really tired and they were looking at each other and, you know, they were just defeating each other through the centuries. And then at one point, the angel just looks at the devil and Eureka, it has the idea. And it charges towards the devil. And instead of trying to kill it with a sword, it jumps and holds the devil at the back, and then it rides. And the end scene is the angel who is riding the devil like a horse into the horizon. Okay. So for me, this is the equivalent of AI. We don't need to fight AI. We need to find the way of utilizing the AI at best for our own purposes. So very simply, AI is not a magic wand. Okay. AI is just a language code. Okay, it just turns what you write into a question, a query, and then it gives an answer. So what we're doing very simply, and I'm going to summarize it for you, is in Opus Plus, which is going to be the online tool, if all goes well, if I give my hair, blah, 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 we are going to create a bespoke type of AI, which is going to do the following. When you ask a question, it's only going to look for the answers closed doors in our program. So you know the quality of information that is coming. Because the problem with AI today is that you ask a question and it goes to get information online, and you don't have the faintest clue whether that information is correct, whether it's been filtered by Microsoft, whether it's true, whether it's not. If we close it to our program, then you have the guarantee that whatever you are asking is only being looked at with the material medical repertory that we have available. So all it's going to do is just going to help you. Example, you are going to be able to say, look, can you just analyze the small remedies within this case? And you are going to allow the closed AI within the program to look at what you've written, the notes of that patient, and to go, okay, according to the information that you've given me, here it is. So if you do it that way, then you're utilizing a very interesting type of technology to your advantage, and you can control it. Because that was the initial issue. How do we control it? How do we know? If it's closed doors, you can control it. And that's what we're doing.
Oh, that sounds absolutely amazing. And I'm totally with you. I think AI needs to be embraced. The reality is it's not going away. So you can either hop on board, and it's very reminiscent of Y2K. People were losing their heads. I was actually working on an internet help desk around the time of Y2K. People were losing their heads about, you know, technology and everything else. And, you know, nothing happened. And I do feel that AI is going to be the same. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm obsessed with podcasts. And I've been listening to Joe Rogan. He's had a lot of conversations on there.
Of course.
Diary with the CEO of a CEO is another podcast I really like. And, you know, they're having all these conversations about AI, and there's so much good to be had. I love that saying, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I feel AI is like that as well. My husband was actually investigating AI for our website. So integrating our website with our email and with our Facebook so that it would only stay within that closed circuit. So I understand the meaning, because then somebody could hop on our website and ask a question and would only answer it within our framework. I'm just wondering, so if you are incorporating the AI in Radar Opus, would it then also be trained up on the questions and answers that other homeopaths give? So would it just be closed within your own?
It's going to be an endless development. So it will be in several steps. And by the way, not Radar Opus, but Opus Plus.
Oh, Opus Plus, sorry. So that will be the online.
So anybody who's
utilizing the AI section of that on the online one, you would kind of have access to, or the AI would.
It will be personal. So if Eugene uses it on Opus Plus, Mark on the team won't be able to know what Eugene is doing because that's breaching privacy.
Would it be training it up though, like on those on the answers that it gives, you know how?
Yes, there will be options. So the way that works, eventually each homeopath will be asked what they would like to share and what they don't want to share. Mm. So normally the useful data that a company like us could use, for example, let me give you an example, is the types of the most common rubrics that you go and search.
Mm.
Okay. So if you allow us to do that, then we could bring out really useful information for everyone that says, hey, we've released this for a year. We can tell you that the most searched rubrics in the world are these. Now, that's perfectly fine privacy-wise because we don't know for what, you know, person who uses it. So it's completely safe in that sense, but it's interesting. And in the same way, again, it depends what people allow us to go and, you know, use, but this could be used to help people treat. Because, for example, and that's something that we're doing for Clifical, for instance, at the moment, which for those who don't know, Clifical is also part of the ZeuSoft umbrella. And it's an online place where we collect anonymously data for cases, so case collection. We've done it with COVID, long COVID, now we're doing it with menopause. What's the point? Well, if you have 5,000 people around the world who are treating the same thing and they give information, clinical information, then of course we can help others to treat that because you may find patterns. And AI could also help in that sense. So finding patterns and go, okay, for example, with COVID, it was very interesting that a remedy was coming up all the time in one part of the world and another remedy was coming out in another part of the world. And I had a really interesting discussions where people were saying maybe it's because the DNA, like the way people are, it's rather different in different parts of the world. And so obviously different remedies are being used in different parts of the world because people are reacting differently. You know, the effects are different, what they feel is different. And so that kind of information is just unbelievably interesting for working homeopaths. And side note, Clifical is being run and it's been paid by us as a company, but it's a community project. ZooSoft does not own the data that goes into Clifical. There is a scientific committee and an organizational committee, which includes the ECH, that is the association, that is the umbrella association of all the homeopathic associations in Europe. And basically, we welcome anyone because the data is not of a private company, it's of the community. And the way that works is basically you enter, you can input your data, you can retrieve your data at any point. And if you want to use your data for scientific studies or purposes, the only thing that we ask is that you ask the question to the scientific committee, which is made up of different people, so they can make sure that what you're doing is good for homeopathy. But it's free. So, you know, we're trying to do stuff like that.
That is really fascinating. I do find all the different homeopaths around the world that I talk to, they have different, like a set of favorite remedies that they use. But I do think some of that comes down to the culture as well. Like if you think of the British, you know, typically they're very natmer, very closed, you know, and you think of the Italians and they're more expressive and, you know, and you think of the Asians, they're like, you know, just more, you know, hard work, just like as a very general, not trying to be racist or anything like that. We all have our little quirks, you know, as a caricature, a national caricature. So it does make sense that there would be some sets of remedies that would feature more strongly in some cultures than others. For sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is there anything else? I mean, what else is happening at Radar Opus? It sounds like there's always something new going on. I think I have personally thank you. And if I haven't yet, I mean, Adonis is just mind blowing. And I think people on this podcast must think that you pay me to say it. Just for the record, everybody, they don't. I have just been... I'm one of those people, if I really love something and I'm really passionate about it, I can't help but tell people about it. And maybe that's why I have this podcast as well. It's like, I can't help but share something that has been really helpful and useful in my life. And because I've used Radar Opus for so long and I literally couldn't do what I did without it. But Adonis is next level. It's absolutely next level. And I was raving at the conference to the homeopath there as well. I'm like, have you not upgraded yet? What's wrong with you? You need to get Adonis. And it was so cheap to upgrade. I couldn't believe how low you kept.
So Synthesis Adonis, for those who don't know, is the latest version of the Synthesis repertory worked on by Dr. Scroyant. Yeah, I mean, in that repertory, you've got more than 10 years of work. And considering how expensive it was to update the repertory yearly, and you know, people were paying 10 years ago, by comparison, the update should have cost around 600 or 700 euros. Wow. And we're charging, you know, 70 euros.
It was so cheap. I quickly paid the pay button because I was like, oh, just in case there's a mistake, I'll just quickly pay for it.
Can it be real? We are doing it out of, you know, because we're nice people and because we want more people to be able to access good information. Because if you have quality information, it's going to be easier to treat someone. And if you treat people, we're going to have healthier people in the world. And that's why homeopaths exist. So it's not just about making money. It's about giving access to qualitative information. And that's why we're there. And also, side note, because we have had a lot of people asking, Adonis has a lot of new stuff in it. But as you know, in the world of homeopathy, you've got the two strands of classical homeopaths and more modern homeopaths. So normally classical homeopath says, oh, all the family stuff, all this is junk. And then all the modern homeopaths go, what are you talking about? This is great. So what we've done is we've done both. So in Adonis, you've got a lot, some classical stuff new, but also a lot of new stuff. And on the family side, if you like the families in the repertory, you can see them. If you don't like them, there's a magic button that goes hide. And then that allows you to hide things that you don't like, because we accept that, you know, homeopathy is very individualistic, if you can say that. Every homeopath thinks in a different way. And so what we do as a, by the way, this is also why in the program and in the repertory there are so many options, because we try to cater for everybody. You know, Eugene really likes this, but Marco doesn't. So a normal company says, well, screw you. What we try and do is say, okay, let me try and help you both so that you can work the best way that you want, because it's not up to us to choose how you do homeopathy. We are just a software provider.
Take a dose of carcinosin at Radar Opus, because you're like obviously trying to please everybody.
It's so hard. It's funny because I've been there for 10 years. Of course, Carlo and Frederick and some of the other people have been there for 30, you know, 40 years. This project started in 1982.
Wow.
But that's 41 years. And I've been into so many calls where we have, like, you know, the top heads of homeopathy and, you know, top teachers, and say, oh, it's really bad. And then the next week you have another meeting with the other set of top homeopathy and say, And you're like, can we please agree on something here? And by the way, on this, I do want to say something. I really do hope with all of my heart that homeopathy is going to get a little more standardized. And what I mean by that is in the education system, because we sell in 80 countries in the world, and the quality and the level of homeopathic teaching around the world is so different, it actually scares me. So it's my personal opinion. People can send me hate mail if they want, but my personal feeling is that everybody should start with classical homeopathy and everybody should start with the grounds and then work from the grounds up. I got nothing against modern homeopathy. I've got nothing against all the fancy stuff that is coming out, but that's the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
You've got to start from the basis. You've got to know how to be a homeopath first. Once you know that, hey, the world is your oyster, but we've got to start from the basis, because if we don't, I think we're also going to, homeopaths are going to look unprofessional.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have a country where you've got to be a medical doctor and then you can be a homeopath. And then another country where you can call yourself an homeopathic practitioner after a 3 weeks course.
That's scaring me. I'm seeing more and more of that happening. You know? I've just heard about another course here in Australia that's happening, which is, you know, it's just put on by somebody who's only got like 5 years experience, and you come out there a qualified homeopath.
We're discussing this at the Element China as well. And I mean, again, my personal opinion, but I think one solution would be to define standard names for the type of training that you have. Because I'm the first proponent of teaching wives and young mothers and young fathers the basics of homeopathy. It's great to know that if your child has a fever, you can try aconitum or belladonna, depending on whether the child is sweating or not. That's great, but that's first aid stuff.
Mm.
So cool. If you've done a course that is first aid, you are a first aid homeopath. Great. You can't do anything else. Or there's, you know, a second level, and that's, you know, you are studying a bit more and you can call yourself something else. Or you are doing 5 years of study, which is like a university, and then you can do certain stuff.
Mm.
Or you are a medical doctor and you've done all of this and then you do homeopathy. All of these things are different, exactly in the same way as you may have a herbalist, you may have a, you know, surgeon. It's just different things that take different time. And as long as we standardize how we call it and, you know, what people can do accordingly, then I think everything's going to be okay. But we need to do that worldwide, because when you look at it from the point of view of a poor patient who comes in, say that I go, okay, so in Italy, it's easy for me because wherever I go, I know that there's a medical doctor first. Okay, in France, totally different. Okay, so, and the poor patient is not going to know the kind of professional that he or she has in front of them. And that's wrong, because homeopathy is here to help people, but it's also fair that a person on the other side knows the type of professional that they are, they've got in front of them.
Yeah, you've just brought up a whole new point, which I think we need to do like a whole other podcast episode.
Next podcast.
Yeah, but no, seriously, I do think it's definitely getting to, because homeopathy is going through this revolution right now, and I think it's just going to be massive. I'm really excited to see where it goes. But also with the internet and because of technology advancement, there is so people, like anybody can do anything they want, really. Like the sky's the limit when it comes to...
And that's a problem.
Yeah, that is a real problem. And as a profession, I think we're going to lose massive credibility if we don't standardize a little bit more. And that comes hypocritical coming from me, who's always like, yeah, just everyone practice the way that they want. But I do think we need to have some standards so that if you want to go to just to somebody who's an intuitive homeopath, then that you've got that option. For me personally, I'm not fussed about going to somebody who's a medical doctor first, because personally, I feel that sometimes the medical mind can get into the side of the intuitive. But I'm just, there are people that would prefer that. And so there's somebody at that level of training, and that's the person that you want to go to. And if you don't have the funds to maybe go to like a professional homeopath, maybe you want to go to a level one first aid homeopath to help with your child's ear infection. And then you know that's their qualification.
There's exactly
a different price point, but you know what you're getting. And then...
Yes. And sorry to interrupt you. And let me give you a practical example of how the hierarchy should work. You may go to someone who is not a medical doctor and doesn't have experience, blah, 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 blah. And they say, and you say, I've got a headache. Okay. Now, headache is one of the hardest things to treat with homeopathy, because you don't know where it's coming from. It could come from a gazillion places, but it could also be a brain tumor. Okay. That's heavy stuff. Okay. So the person should know that the moment the headache arrives, they should say to the patient, look, okay, let me hear what's going on. Let me give you this as an example. Okay, I'm going to give you a remedy to what I think is your headache, but you should also seek medical advice because we don't know where this headache is coming from. So to be on the safe side, if you do want to go and do a checkup, that's what I advise you to do. Because what happens is if the person with a headache has come to you and they've got a terminal cancer and they don't know, and the next day they die, what's going to happen is people are going to say, oh, they went to a homeopath and a homeopath killed them. That's not true. That's not true at all. That happens every day in the world. Things happen. But at least when you're going to a homeopath, the homeopath is aware that the person needs to be told that when you don't know what's happening, you need to go and do a checkup.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know. You just don't know, do you? So, yeah, I mean, when my child has a fever, sure, I treat him with homeopathy. But if the fever persists beyond a certain temperature, of course I'm going to call the doctor. And there are some people in the world that don't do that and say, oh, it's okay. I'm just going to use, you know, my grandma's remedies. Okay, you know, you can do that if you want to. But, you know, allopathic medicine exists to save your ass in, you know, cases as well. And we should use everything. We should be intelligent and we should use what is best according to what the situation is. We are parents. So you know exactly what I'm talking about because we are faced with that pretty much 500 times a day.
Absolutely. It's definitely a conversation that needs to be had. I've got that in my mind now.
It's going to be a 3-hour
leave it with me. Yeah, no, definitely. We need to talk. We need to like nut it out and maybe get some people from around the world and do a little, I don't know, a panel discussion or something about how we do this because it needs to be done before things kind of get out of hand. So many new developments in homeopathy, which gets me so excited and I absolutely love and I think it's really great, but we do need to do it in a safe way.
Yeah, in the safest possible way. And I think just to inform people that that's all you need to do. Because at the end of the day, the person makes the choice, but it is only possible to make a choice if you are aware of the possibilities. It's that simple.
Marco, you're not allowed to go until you tell our listeners how they can get the most out of their software. So, you know, if I really want to get the most out of my incredible Radar Opus software, how would I do that? And how do I upskill myself?
Okay. So if you head over to radaropus.com, we've actually got a really cool video section where you've got step-by-step training. So you've got like basic training and they're all video trainings, 5-6 minutes at most each. So it's really easy. There's about 10 of those. Once you go through those, we've got a gazillion more videos and training in there. So that's the easiest way. On top of that, you can contact your local representative and they will always be happy to give you live training session. On top of that, you've got the manual that no one ever looks at because nobody looks at manuals apart from 1% of the population. And finally, we're actually going to start a really cool Q&A session on Zoom, which we're going to, I think we're going to send a couple of newsletters and on our Facebook channels and anyone can join. So we're going to do it once a month and anyone who wants to join can join. And finally, head over to our Facebook community, which is called, you just look on Facebook for Radar Opus Community, because that's a really cool place. There's actually a few thousands of people in there, all homeopaths. And basically, whenever someone asks a question, someone's going to answer, and it's either going to be a homeopath or a member of the Radar Opus team, whether it's an homeopathic question, whether it's, hey, how do you do this in the software, whether it's, I've got a difficult case. It's like a huge family. And yeah, head over, and we'll be there to answer your questions.
I have to say that Facebook group has saved my ass on many occasions. Like sometimes I'm just sitting here, I'm like, oh, how do I repertorize this? And I'll just quickly post in the group. And you know, you get an answer so quickly, no matter the time of day or night. So yeah, I'm so grateful for that Facebook group. I've been in there for a couple of years as well. So I really appreciate you doing that as well, because it's a lot of work running a Facebook group. And
don't get me started.
Yes. I really appreciate that. Is there any final message that you want to leave our listeners with about Radar Opus or about why you think it's important that every homeopath has Radar Opus in their life?
Actually, no, not about Radar Opus, but just about homeopathy. Just put love into what you do. Just put love and passion and try to be a bit patient, because sometimes the answer that doesn't come, you know, in 2 seconds. But as long as you've got your heart in the right place, yeah, Radar Opus is a great product, but even if you use another product, it's fine. And at the end of the day, you know, what matters is that you do things with your heart.
Oh, that is a beautiful message. And thank you. Grazie mille.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me. And I do hope to see you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Take care.